Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. J.P. Flaum is the managing partner of Green Peak Partners, a management consulting firm with offices in Atlanta, Charlotte, Denver, New York, and San Francisco. Prior to Green Peak, J.P. was a top-producing managing director with G.H. Smart. J.P. helped build G.H. Smart from 3 full-time people to over 15 respected consultants serving half the world's top 10 private equity firms as clients. Becky Winkler is a principal at Green Peak Partners. During her career, Becky has conducted over 1,000 executive-level assessments, helping CEOs make smart decisions about their human capital. She's also coached numerous leaders, enabling them to achieve peak performance. Both of them are here today to talk about a study that indicates there's something to be said for hiring nice people. Becky and JP, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks for the time. We are excited to talk about the insight that you don't have to be a bully or a jerk or just a numbers-focused guy to increase your company valuation and stock performance.
Now, to begin with, what prompted this study?
Two things. Us ensuring our own accuracy, predicting success with new hires, making sure that when clients sent us as candidate, we in fact were able to predict which finalist candidates really would succeed in that job and ferret out the ones who would not succeed. The second is we're obsessive about what predicts success in future roles. What are the traits? What are the backgrounds of leaders that are going to work, especially going forward? Because what worked in the past appears to not be working nearly so well in today's world.
And Becky, how about you? What was your role in this?
My role was to organize the construct and conceptual map of the research, as well as making sure that we had our criterion measure very crisp. We were very consistent in the way in which we interviewed so that the data would be very clean and very valid, and just pushing things through and making sure we were able to execute.
Now, you interviewed 72 senior executives.
Right. And the executives were assessed from approximately 7 years ago until recent times, at least recent enough that their performance could be assessed. So they were all in the job at least 6 months. And then part of the recent research we did was for each of these executives who had been assessed, we talked to their bosses and say, here's how we predicted these individuals would do. How did they end up doing? What really happened, not only in terms of their leadership and the results they were able to achieve, but also in terms of the bottom line performance of the units over which they had purview?
So we went back after we did our evaluation of whether a client should hire this executive or not. And then for the ones that they did hire, we were able to then ask them, truly, how did they end up doing? Not just how did you like them or what were the strengths and weaknesses, but what did they do in terms of driving financial performance, whether it's top line growth, EBITDA or bottom line growth, increased return on their actual investment, because many of these clients were private equity investors. It was looking at those outcome data to then say, okay, what type of executive led to those better financial outcomes?
So you were able to assess their interpersonal behaviors and determine patterns that might affect results?
Correct. And we let the smart folks at Cornell crunch through reams and reams of data to isolate what were those most important variables that led to the great outcomes and also those bad outcomes you'd want to avoid. All these different things. Was it somebody that was first born in their family? Was it somebody that had P&L experience earlier? Was it somebody that went to an Ivy League school?
So did you come up with anything revealing about schools or area of study?
What we found is that education was not a relevant correlator for predicting success.
It's also important to note, though, that while we found no relationship between where one went to school and how well they did later on, only 10% of our sample attended an Ivy League, and it really wouldn't allow us to take a look at that variable. In terms of area of study, we didn't investigate that.
All right, let's talk about some of these business items you've discovered. For example, bully traits. You found that they were signs of incompetence or lack of strategic intellect.
This is one not studied as much in our specific study here, but common knowledge is the only place that real hierarchical, top-down bully style worked is in an extreme turnaround. So we literally have 90 days, the company is going bankrupt, and we need to just slash and burn, kind of the classic chainsaw Al Dunlop approach. There may be an argument to be made that that's helpful there. But in our study, looking at things that primarily were not turnarounds, there were some situations where cost reduction and financial pressures were very important. But what we found is it's not the bully traits and the hierarchical top-down leader that led to the higher performance. You can imagine also stronger teams and a more fun place to work, but just looking at that performance metric, it was the leader that was able to have that emotional intelligence, that flexibility and that self-awareness to be able to be adaptable and to lead in different situations. It was someone who was able to listen, who was able to not necessarily always build consensus, but get input before deciding. It was somebody able to enroll people by engaging with them as people and using interpersonal skills as opposed to just dictating.
It's still important to be directive at times and to be assertive and all that required of a leader. And at the same time, it's important to do so in a respectful way where people want to work for you. They're excited to get up. I think the recent statistic is 40% of people leave their jobs because of their immediate boss. That's not a finding from this study, of course. But what this study does is give that texture, bring that more to light to say, if that leader is at the top of an organization, the amount of fallout that can happen from them being rude or arrogant or just not pleasant to work with is much more significant.
Absolutely. When we say nice guys can finish first, we mean that person who has that blend of a strong sense of urgency, a results orientation, and also this highly developed self-awareness, people skills, and those interpersonal skills that correlate to the strong financial outcomes.
Right. Now, as a manager or an executive within a company, you may be a caring boss with strong interpersonal skills. But if the company is headed by a more directive, maybe bureaucratic leader, it might affect the culture in such a way that no matter what a manager can do, the company will still be in the direction of the leader of the firm.
Absolutely. I do think that people make the place, and that starts at the top.
It's harder in many cases when you have a CEO setting either a bullying or autocratic tone from the top.
Okay, JP, how do you define nice?
More than nice, what we mean is effective at leading, having strong interpersonal skills, strong self-awareness, strong flexibility and adaptability, and a strong emotional intelligence that leads to an ability to lead different kinds of people, because the more diverse things are getting, the harder it is to lead. When you have lots of diversity in the mix, like most modern workplaces do, especially at the senior level, whether it's gender diversity or racial diversity or age diversity or managing across a geography, maybe even internationally, you've got to be much more facile at reading the situation, reading the people, knowing how to communicate to them in a way that does enroll them. You have to be able to lead in those diverse environments.
And how do you define self-awareness?
How we defined self-awareness was after we assessed these individuals, we rated them on a 1 to 5 scale, 1 being absolutely no idea the impact they have on others, and 5 being absolutely understand, incredibly insightful. When they do something, they know what they're doing and why they're doing it and can predict the impact they're going to have. So after you spend 4.5 hours with someone in an interview where you cover from the growing up years until modern day, you really get a sense of how self-aware someone is. So it was something that we rated as a predictor variable on the front end.
And the ones who had the highest self-awareness scored highest on all the categories. So driving results, managing people being some of the most important, but all the categories you cared about were aided by this self-awareness, meaning if you really do take the time and do the hard work to understand yourself, where you're good, where you're not as good, where you need to be augmented or complemented, you have a better chance of having your company be very successful.
So self-awareness is very important.
Absolutely. I think in the end, people just have to see how their behavior doesn't serve them, because we all are the way we are because we think it works.
Okay, I'm just curious, are these nice qualities things that can be taught?
Absolutely. Some of our clients bring us CEOs who are just great, and they have the intellect and industry expertise, and they've been at the company for 5 years, and they know everything going on, but they're sending flaming emails to people, and they're rubbing peers the wrong way. Many people say, when you get to be a 48-year-old or 58-year-old or 68-year-old executive, can you really change these behaviors?
And what is your response to that?
Frankly, when you get to that level of the organizational hierarchy, Some of these interpersonal behaviors, these leadership behaviors, are the only things you can change. Change is scary and change is hard and change takes work. But if there's enough incentive, then people actually can dramatically change their behavior. And where it starts is not with focusing on the behavior. It starts with focusing on the awareness, the mindset. What does delegation really mean? Does it mean that I'm likely to have a risk that the job won't get done and that's going to look bad, but then I'm not going to delegate? But if you can shift someone's mindset to delegation is the only way this company can succeed and the only way to really grow my people, they can all of a sudden think of lots of behaviors to, in fact, do the delegation, because we all make up what things mean. Does marriage mean ball and chain, or does marriage mean spending my life with my best friend? Dramatically different behaviors come out of it. The same thing happens in the workplace.
So whether you're talking about the top person in an organization or the first line supervisors, the issue is how they interact with individuals above and below them.
Absolutely. The what, meaning the outcome, is often dramatically impacted by the how. And our assessment covers each job that a candidate has had in successive order, looking at not only what the result was, but how it compared versus peers, versus what they were intending to create, whether it's growing sales or managing acquisitions or building new products, those things that tend to fuel a company's success. But we have always been sensitive to leadership and people and relationship dimensions of business. And what was interesting is if you only cared about the financial result, you better look at the how, because it drives the what. Was it by slashing and burning, or was it by enrolling people and building consensus and having some compromise and that sort of thing? It tended to lead to that sustainable result as opposed to a one-off, I told you to do it because I'm your boss.
All right. Now, coming out of this recession, will talented people decide not to work for that bureaucrat and prefer to seek employment at a company that has a reputation for good leadership?
If the person that you're working for is, for lack of a better word, not a nice guy, it's considered arrogant, impatient, stubborn, with personality clashes and inability to navigate disagreements, can create conflict, is intense, a little arrogant, or has crossed the line in the past. As soon as people have options, I do think they'll look to find greener pastures.
The other thing I would say is our study focused on only senior executives, CEOs, and direct reports, and at least at the top of the organization, certainly in this country, we're seeing more and more knowledge workers. These people who have invested in themselves and their skill sets and consider themselves successful, and by many dimensions we all say they're successful, are the ones who don't respond to this top-down leadership, to the hierarchy, to the bullying model. Contrast it with the nice guy or the self-aware guy, we might more accurately say. And when people have more choices, they won't stay and tolerate that environment where they can't be the leader they want to be, nor do they want to be bullied personally. And you're going to see people fleeing those places and going to the places that are performance-oriented, but also have a respect for people.
And wouldn't it be nice if that created the leverage those bully leaders needed in order to see the light and change their behavior?
So do you think that boards of directors and CEOs will become aware of potentially high turnover and begin to look at the way people interact with staff as well as their overall bottom line performance?
We're seeing that many of our clients who are investor clients and are on boards are becoming acutely concerned about turnover, especially voluntary turnover, where some of your best people are leaving. And often once an investor has recently purchased a new company and now is on the board, that is one of the biggest things that they're concerned about. They're seeing some real turnover, and it's a concern that all of a sudden you're taking steps backward instead of forward. And then interestingly enough, the investors themselves face this problem from their limited partners, who are the ones that contribute the money to the funds that these investors then deploy by buying companies. These limited partners are saying one of their top several criteria now for investing in a new fund for a private equity firm is in fact the stability of that investment firm's own team. So we're seeing that the stability of teams and the cohesiveness and alignment of a structure that's built is very much front and center in a number of people's minds.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So Becky and JP, do you have any concluding thoughts you want to leave our audience with?
I guess my final thoughts would be the importance of balance. Balanced people are those who are adaptable, flexible, who know when to turn on and off certain parts of their personality in order to get the results they need. They're able to balance others' achievement and their own accomplishment. So I think that balance, moderation, and self-awareness as part of that equation are keys to success as a leader.
I concur there and maybe add one other thought, which is about this theme. It has come into question the great man model, whether it's the charismatic leader or the uber leader, who often, of course, is the CEO. That paradigm has come into question not just recently. Jim Collins talks about a level 5 leader who's more of that humble, understated leader who often tends to drive the success. Someone who is able to get out of their own ego, out of their own way, to really put the company first, to put the team first. And it largely requires that self-awareness, that humility, that ability to not have it be all about yourself. These kind of traits that end up leading to their true leadership and making their company as successful as possible.
We've been talking to Becky Winkler and JP Flaum. Thanks to the two of you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
AMA webcasts bring you 60 minutes of thought-provoking insight, specific answers to your management challenges, and conversations with renowned thought leaders. Best of all, they're all free. For a complete schedule of upcoming webcasts, visit the events calendar at amanet.org/events. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.